It's Wednesday, July 9th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 107 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad. And that was a cute little, you know, director's point.
I know.
And I like that.
Pointed at a window, too.
You did. I'm like, should I say something?
John,
should I jump out or what? I
mean, hey, you in the street. Welcome to Fear the Boot.
He's like, hi, Fear the Boot guys.
I see no finger in my direction, so I'll just assume that Dan's pointing at me or pointing northward.
No one is going to put any bodily appendage near you after the two episodes ago.
Well, they might show him a finger.
Okay. Yeah.
That's very true. That's very
from
true.
From a safe distance.
I did point vaguely north, so Chris, we can just pretend that was at you, even though it was really more northwest. Mm-hmm. You're more northeast of us, but hey.
And my name is Chris. How's that?
Excellent.
Works perfectly.
Now, Dan, Chris, we're in a new environment.
Yeah.
We have a new studio.
I don't know really if this is going to change our sound quality a whole lot.
I severely doubt it.
Well,
given that we stopped cutting when Pearl barks at us.
Well, we can cut that out of the show now because, except Pearl's in the room here, we were recording on the lower level of my split level, which is completely unenclosed. So it's open to the rest of the house. And over this past weekend, Carla and I moved stuff around. So now I'm in one of the spare bedrooms with a closable door and we're away from the furnace, which once in a while that did give us a little bit of background hum. So,
and there was this toilet issue and
Chris has had his compressor ordered. So Chris's sound quality should drastically improve by next episode. Or so we hope. Yeah. Doesn't have it this episode. And you have a basement full of children right now. So.
Yeah. You said you had six kids over.
There are currently six kids in our house. Four of them.
Wow.
Four of them
are they playing D&D?
Four of them are mine, and then my wife's, or my sister-in-law's two kids from Florida are up here. And it's they've been up actually really total time, about a week and a half, and this is kind of their last night here. So if you hear any noises in the background from my end, that might be what you're hearing, is just general chaos from being the last night of celebratory funness that goes on when you have six children running around the house.
Cool.
Are they like little children or
no? They're one of them is I think about the same age as my second oldest and the other one is 10, so he kind of falls somewhere in between child's 3 and 4.
Well, they're old enough to be amused by Nintendo at this point.
Oh, absolutely, most definitely. The 10-year-old is he has a DS and he's quite amused by Xbox Live and all of that kind of stuff. So
excellent, easy crowd control.
Yes,
new portal for Fear the
yes.
Boot should be launched very shortly, also before the next episode. I have the dedicated server. Actually, today, as we're recording this, it's Tuesday evening, and I just got the server built earlier today, and I have access to it. I've just started working on it. It's going to take me a little bit. Hopefully, within the next week, we'll have that up, along with the new form, and at least an episode zero for the two new shows. If you're going to be at Gen Con, there is a gentleman by the name of Christian who is putting together a get-together for everyone there, for all of his fellow Fear the Booters. So if you're interested in
none
that...
None of those DLI fans. Yeah. You have to show your Fear the Boot fan club.
Well, you
card.
Know, someone was asking on the forums why there's so many RPG podcasts in Missouri, and they started listing them all out, at least the ones they listed. What's really odd is we are the only one in Missouri that's not in Springfield.
Yeah.
And for anyone
that is weird. You're right.
That is
strange. I
haven't
even thought about it, but I can think of like three Springfield casts right off the top of my head.
And Springfield, for anyone who's not familiar with Missouri, is not a very big town by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, for Missouri, I mean, it's in the
Well, there is one outside.
Three.
There's Phil's Red Earth Saga.
Well, it's questionable. That's an RPG or sci-fi or exactly what that is. But
it's a little bit of Phil, so it's wonderful.
You would think that just the vast majority of the population of Missouri being concentrated in St. Louis and the eastern half of Kansas City, that's where the podcast would be, but they're
Let
not.
Let me tell you something about Springfield, Missouri. I spent a year of my life there. There are three things to do. You can go to actually, there's four. You could either do crystal meth, get drunk, go to school, or do a podcast. That's really about it.
So we admire you guys, like over...
I can personally testify that it's possible to do three of those four things at the same time.
What frightens me is that having sex is not on that list.
No, well, you're too whacked out on crystal meth to have sex.
Yeah, because usually that's one of the defaults. It's usually
you're
drinking or you're having sex.
Yeah.
So, DLI, Bear Swarm, I forget the other one, but hey, salute to all of you guys. I don't know why you're podcasting so much down there, but we're glad you're doing that
instead
of crystal meth.
I totally understand why.
I was in a WoW guild that was based out of Springfield. Shadow of Death on the Asgore server. But, yeah, that's my story.
Anyway,
we're all kind of script kiddies.
I'm going to hire someone to look into this, find out why gaming's so big down there. But anyway, if you're interested in meeting up with
us... Because there's nothing else to do. It's so damn boring. I hate that town. I'm sorry. Go on.
That's all right. If you're interested in meeting up with us at Gen Con or meeting some of your fellow listeners, check the show notes for a link. Let Christian know that you're going to be coming out there so he can add you to the headcount, because he's trying to pick a venue that fits the number of people to be there. And when we carry over to the new forums, I'm sure we'll keep planning it there. And in a future show, I'll give you a link to the new thread just so you guys can keep up with that.
And I myself has a tragic Gen Con announcement. Because of renting complexities down at Columbia, where I'm going to be moving for law school in the fall, I cannot go to Gen Con.
I have to be
moving into my apartment on that Friday. Law school starts that Monday, so... I have explored all alternatives, and there's absolutely no way I can do it. So
no,
my
John
heart
and
will
Gen
be going
Con.
Out to you at Gen Con as I am moving couches.
Right now, it's just going to be me and Chris. Everyone send nag mail to Chad and text telling them to go.
Yeah, really?
I don't want to go.
Chad, you would enjoy it.
You really would enjoy it.
I didn't enjoy it the last time I went.
Dude, that's because you were there for like half an hour.
I enjoyed it last year.
It really is. As a veteran Gen Con goer, I have to say that it still holds massive amounts of enjoyment for me. I really like it.
You know, that Daniel Perez is going to be there, and he's so creepy. I don't know.
He is. But you know what, though? He's a terribly nice guy, because in my situation, I'm arriving at Gen Con about 3 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. And then I get to walk around downtown Indianapolis with all of my baggage. And last year I did that.
Your emotional baggage, that is.
As well as my physical
and your
baggage.
Pieces of your broken heart.
Yes.
And shattered life.
But Daniel Perez
centuries ago.
Hey, I'm Lonely Soldier, home from the front.
Lonely Soldier 15.
But Daniel Perez was nice enough to let me shack up on his floor for several hours until you guys finally showed up and I can get my stuff into your hotel. And I believe he's doing the same thing again this year. It's toss-up between him and Grungy Dan, whoever gets back to me first. So
Aren't you, Dan, and Chris, like, staying at Shea Ritz or something? Like,
yeah.
Only the best for Fear the Boot?
What is it? It's the Canterbury Hotel. It's, like, these European... And even then, I don't have, like, the basic room, because all they had left was, like, the higher-end suites. So it's, like, marble countertops.
This is the intersection of bad judgment.
This is
extremely bad judgment.
Yeah. I'm paying up into 4 figures for the hotel that weekend.
That's another reason I can't go with you. I can't afford it.
I'm offering
I told him that we were going that way. There was absolutely no way I was
putting
my share of the bill.
When I got that reservation, I accepted I was covering it. It's just like, whoever wants to come, just show up and crash room space, and everyone's abandoning me like this is some kind of downwind from Chris.
So let me talk to Dawn.
All this means is that we'll now have some space. There won't be as much cuddling as there was last year.
Well, there wouldn't be anywhere. There's going to be 4 beds in there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so
you can have the cuddle bed and the sleeping bed.
Exactly, yeah. There will be 1 bed for all of us, and then 3
Ew.
Beds for luggage.
Ew.
Anyway.
You two are so small.
Speaking of conventions, John's acceptance speech from the Robin D. Laws Award is online. My brother-in-law put it up online.
All 30 seconds of it. Greatest speech ever.
Well, Drag gives a nice, serious, very flattering preamble and introduces us. And I get up there and talk for about 7 seconds.
I will link that in the show notes if you want to see it. The guy who's up there first is Drake. And then after that, John and I go up. John's the one that gives the speech. It's a very short speech. So
that's apologies to Tracy Hickman, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's offensive to the ears of anyone with a sense of moral propriety. So don't listen to it if you're looking for G-rated fun. But it's... I'm proud of it. Anyway.
I can't find out. That's actually been up for a while, because he sent me an email saying, oh, I'm going to put this up, and you just wanted some more information. So I gave it to him, never heard from him again. So I just thought he got stuck. And it turns out he actually has had it up on YouTube for a while. Hmm. All righty, let's move off of that now. Back into Chris's discomfort zone. So since we were digging around through old games several episodes back, and even though we never gave the segment a title...
So, wait, this is the Gamer Closet thing?
Yeah.
I totally missed that, and of course I don't listen to podcasts because I'm too good for Web 2.0.
Right. We got that memo.
Yeah. What is the Gamer Closet?
Well, Gamer Closet is...
And this just isn't some cheap segue for the listeners. I really don't know.
And you find a game that is 10 years old and gathering dust and in no way, shape, or form supported by any role-playing game company today.
Right.
And you say, it's a game
this
that
is
maybe
better than all the stuff that's out now.
Yeah, it's maybe the game that you bought with the intention of playing it. Maybe it's the game that you got as a freebie at some point in time. Maybe it's the game that you were digging around in your basement looking for something else and you happened to stumble across this instead.
Maybe it's the Spelljammer box you bought for $2.99 at KB Toys in 1995.
You know, I would buy a Spelljammer box for $2.99.
You know, I did.
You're a lucky man.
Never played it.
I remember when they used to sell first edition AD&D mods at KB Toys, and I used to dig through there all the time. That's when they had produced the Conan line of mods, but they had all kinds of. They used to have quite a decent role playing selection at KB Toys back in my youth.
I think I caught them when they were getting rid of the last of it. This was the late second edition crash phase where they had a billion different campaign settings and no one was buying any of them. So I just showed up and bought a bunch of Dark Sun and Al-Qaeda and Spelljammer.
Al-Qaeda!
You know, and if there's anything to buy on Dark Sun, it would have been the 15 cases of Dragon King's hardcover book that were always sitting around for Dark Sun.
I don't think I got those. I got, like, spiral notepad module things that came in a D&D box.
Like completely unlicensed, illegal modules.
No, they were completely licensed. They were just produced at roughly half a cent a book.
My favorite old supplement to collect like that, and I think I've got all of them, is the ones, this is back when they had the Mistara setting, and they had came with the CD with the interactive adventure, and you'd select, you know, you'd go to the various tracks, and they had dialogue and sound effects to in between the scenes. Those are great. Great to listen to. And I have to say, actually, I never got to play them.
I bought one of those. I bought Night of the Vampire.
Yes.
Which was as cheesy and bad as you could possibly imagine anything with an audio accompaniment.
It was wonderful.
In fact, I kind of want to run Night of the Vampire again.
All right, so that's what Gamer's Closet was. Okay. About several episodes ago.
About really terrible games that nobody played.
We were talking about digging around through our closets for old games, and the people on the forum gave us the unofficial name of the Gamer's Closet. So, Chris, you've come up with some more for us.
Chris, you've come out of the closet.
I'm walking out of my closet. I'm backing out of my closet. And I found, and of course, there's multitude to choose from, but I have two particular ones that I found. One of them, and actually, hold on, let me reach over here and grab it. This is Run Out the Guns Adventure Kit. It's okay. This is one of the old boxed, you know, bookshelf game sets that are produced by Iron Crown. This is actually back in the late 90s, 98, I believe.
Is that a sailing game?
It is. It's a pirate game. It is a pirate game, and I actually played this at a demo at Gen Con, and I had a horrible time, mostly because the people there
I'm not going to Gen Con. A horrible time. I knew it.
The people there were jerks, but as I was looking through it earlier this evening, just trying to actually figure out exactly everything that was in this game, rules-wise, it looks like it's a really clunky behemoth that provides more frustration than anything else. But however, I have to say, from a resource standpoint, it's a friggin' gold mine. I mean, there's descriptions of all the various positions on the ship crew.
Oh, my.
Well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You say yes, like you're above those kind of jokes. Please, Chris.
There is one of the coolest parts about this is that there's the game itself is about seven different little short books that it recommends that you pull the staples out of and just lay all the pieces of paper out there. It actually says to do that, but one of the coolest things in here is it has like about 16 pages of nothing but ship descriptions and all the various weights and classes of ships, and with ship character sheets, where the guns are, their placement, their weight, amount of shot.
I would absolutely love to play this game. I am really big into that whole tall ship thing. This sounds like a really, really cool game.
It's very interesting. And the character creation, I was looking at that. It's very interesting because it basically forces you to pick a crew. So in other words, it gives like four or five different categories of crewmen aboard the ship. And it says you have to choose all of these orders first. So and it gives like two or three character types underneath each group. And so once somebody picks a character type in one group, nobody can pick anything from that group until everyone's gone around the horn and picked something from the other groups to round out the crew. Then the last person to pick, his crewman, gets to then go first to pick the character background, because it has a bunch of little backgrounds in here as well to really kind of get you going. and it has a number of different scenarios in here, and a rather gorgeous and semi-authentic looking map of the Caribbean, or Caribbean, depending on how you want to determine it. But, you know, multiple rules on ship combat, it's D10 based, there's skills, and it's not necessarily a role-playing game the way it looks, but yet it's also much more than a board game. So it's kind of one of those shady gray areas kind of crossing between.
I always
wanted
to run a naval game. I bought Stormwrack for 3.5 D&D, but never got a campaign off the ground for it. Or rather, out to sea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that what's it called again? Run Out the Guns?
Run Out the Guns by Iron Crown. I would wager you could find them on eBay for less than $5, would be my guess.
I have to check that out.
It is actually, and the cover art is gorgeous because it's an actual picture, and it's all very piratey, you know, with the little musket pistol and, you know, the maps.
Dan, I don't want to play Cyberpunk anymore. I want to play a pirate game.
I'm not going to Cyberpunk it.
What?
What?
Let me try that again. I'm not going to stop you from running it.
No.
I like tall ships as well, and you know what tall ships allow?
What?
Broadsides.
Yes, they do.
There you go. And it does have ship combat. That's one of the separate books in there.
I must finish my Cyberpunk campaign.
All right. Now, I had to stay quiet through that whole thing because I'm over here just...
Petting your dog?
Well, I'm petting the dog, but I'm petting the dog to soothe my mind, to find my calm center to prepare for Chris's pick number two. Because he teased us with this before the game. He's so nasty. And then instead he deviates into this other pirate game, which does sound good. But I couldn't think about that because all I knew about was pick number two.
Well, let me Chris? Go. I will. I'll be happy to. Just to jump back into a little BattleTech history, and this is not letter writing history, but this is just actual BattleTech, the game itself, not the game history. When FOSSA was actually taking off and really becoming successful as a company, one of the things that they tried to do was create the BattleTech Center, which was basically a video arcade where they featured mech cockpits, where you could go there and you could be part of a team and run around and blow up other mechs, and you were sitting in a cockpit and had very intricate controls and foot pedals, and it was very, very advanced for a video game at the time.
Yeah, it was, to give anyone who did not ever go to one of these. I think there was two or three of them. There was one in Dallas, one in Chicago, and one in either LA or one of the two Sands. It was one of the three big cities out in California.
Yeah.
But the one, of course, we went to was Chicago, being closest to here. But you go there, you get put in one of two teams, they take you over, and they have what look like fighter simulators, where you sit down, you've got a screen in front of you and controls, and they close you inside of the cockpit. And it, you know, of course, by modern day standards, if we were to go there today, we'd probably cringe at how low tech it looks.
Yeah.
But for the time, 10, 15 years ago, I mean, this was really high tech.
It was 3D.
Yeah, I mean, this was really kick-ass stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was very advanced for its day and age. And it not only had the BattleTech ones, I mean, and an offshoot was that, I can't remember the name exactly. I want to say
Red
it was
Planet.
Called, was it Red Planet? I knew I was going to say Red Earth, but yeah, Red Planet. And that
That's
was,
Phil's thing.
In fact, they even did a half-hour-long show, I think, on Sci-Fi that ran to help promote those centers. And they had, like, competitions, and they had people playing in characters. And I think they did that also for the BattleTech Center. They even had someone playing Natasha Kerensky.
Now, the one thing I felt shafted out of when we went, I went
was
up
the fact
there,
that they rushed us through, didn't show us how to play, and we couldn't communicate with each other?
It was the last part, because they had two game types. They had an Alpha game and an Omega game. And the Alpha game, it was supposed to be an 8-way free-for-all. Now, what we managed arguing with people at work there to talk them into letting us do is at least color the mechs differently, and we just had these sort of non-aggression agreements that if you're on Team Green, you don't shoot other mechs on Team Green. But for some stupid reason, they would not let us play the Omega game. The Omega game was one where you actually get two teams of four. It uses similar simulators. They were right there and available. No one was using them. But in addition to being on two teams instead of a mindless free-for-all, you had headsets where you could communicate with other people on your team and do much more sophisticated stuff.
The headsets were probably broke or never arrived.
No, they worked perfectly, but the morons that worked there
Would
who not let
there,
us play the Omega game.
The people who worked there were really rude and condescending.
Yeah.
It was like,
they kind of were, actually.
These are geeks in their summer job, or we're geeks, and they're the cool kids in their summer job. I don't know.
But they would not.
I did not like it.
They had this stupid restriction where they, like, when you came there, you got a card, and they would not let you play an Omega game until you had played through a certain, like, this fairly high number of alpha games. And
yes, that's correct.
Or whatever.
Whatever it was, I don't remember.
It was more than that. It was really expensive.
It was expensive. It was expensive. Yeah. I mean, then center wise, they had it tricked out nice because once you got through there, then they had a nice little store where they had a number of Battletech Center merchandise, t shirts, game products.
Well, and they gave you these pretty cool printouts that like listed what happened at each time point and how many kills you got and how many times you died. And
I got those in laser tag.
And it was pretty cool. I mean, it was overall really good. It's just it needed a lot of smoothing out. But anyways, we're tangenting here. Chris, continue with your pick from the Gamer's Closet. Anyway, This was relevant.
This is relevant. So I happened to find inside a box of another game, but I happened to find the Battletech Center Operations Manual, which kind of explains the rules and everything. And the reason, of course, why I had this is because I went there. But what got everybody else here all excited was the fact that this was one of the locations that my wife and I went to on our honeymoon when we got married. Was the
your totally non-gamer wife.
Yes. Did you continue the LARP while you were there? No.
Did you actually
fight for new Aragorn?
and I should correct that for those who didn't hear. I should have said New Aragon. That was very, very bad of me to name the planet wrong. It was New Aragon, not New Aragorn. But no, she actually did not participate in the Battletech Center. She had just no desire to do such a thing, and so basically, she just let me go and geek out for a half hour, 45 minutes in there until I had basically spent myself, and then
in half an hour.
I don't remember how long it was. I was there for a while. I shot lots of things.
Well, we need to get you Sting's email address. Half an hour is as long as you can go in the Battletech Center.
It was Tantric Battletech Centering. It was an incredibly amount of fun, and it was a very good honeymoon. And yes, again, she's as Chad put it earlier, she was a saint for allowing that to actually happen on the honeymoon.
She's the patron saint of gamer wives.
Yes. Sadly, they all folded. All the Battletech Centers are now non-existent, of course.
Yeah, because the people who ran them were dicks.
Well, I wish they hadn't, because I think one of the things that FASA has shown is that its properties make excellent video games.
Yeah. I don't think it could have survived. I mean, MechWarrior 3 in the LAN. You got the same thing. You turn the lights out, it's the exact same thing.
I guess. I mean, it was nice being closed into a cockpit and having
I can make my own cockpit.
The controls as they were described.
I can play in the bathroom.
And you never have to get up
either. Sitting on a toilet seat.
Just have people slide food under the door.
How much immersion do you need here?
You could flush your heat.
Talk about your heat sinks.
Yeah.
Chris, you got any other quick hits for us before you close the closet door and stuff the monkey back in there?
I have one more. This is another. I stuck with the box game theme here, with the exception of the Battletech Center diversion. This is a game put together by Pace Setter, who did Chill and did one other game. But this is their nod to space opera, pulp space opera. It's called Star Ace. And I know it's been mentioned before once or twice in the forum, but it's Star Ace Adventures in Space, and it has unbelievably cheesy cover art in the box.
Space Ace.
I remember Space Ace and Dragon's Lair.
And Dragon's Lair, yeah, but no, this is has the action words.
This is
words
a cheap knockoff trying to ride the Space Ace popularity.
Am I the only one that could never get anywhere in Dragon's Lair?
No, you can't. It's freaking impossible. No one could.
Yeah.
What, no, Dragon's Lair?
$3 games.
The game that was like a Laserdisc
cartoon.
Chris,
you could actually play those Laserdisc games and get somewhere.
I dominated Dragon's Lair, dude.
Oh my god.
Lies.
I don't believe it.
No. I totally dominated that game. I mean, it took a while to get there, but once I beat it, it was, I love that game. Loved
I think he has Dragon's
game.
Lair confused like Miss Pac-Man's Lesbian Adventures or something. We're going to...
There was a number of those Laserdisc-based games, and I really got into those, but I was never good at Space Ace. But Bega's Battle was another favorite of mine. That combined video game and Laserdisc at the same time. And then there was a helicopter one where you flew a Blackhawk helicopter. Yes. Yeah, it was funny. It's a helicopter game where you flew a helicopter of all things. It was amazing.
Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, who'd have thunk that?
All right, so go on.
Anyway, the game. Star Ace. Starships, Alien Worlds, swashbuckling action, it says in the cover. And this game was produced in the era where a lot of RPGs had tables, your Marvel superheroes level of tables. And there's a large action resolution table on here. But you've got your evil empire, your alliance fighting against said evil empire. You've got... For alien races, you have humans, of course. You have crystal-type people. Then you have these things called the crystal clones, which are your half-elves, which are your hybrids of these crystal people and humans. What? You have bears. You have polar bears.
It's a furry dream.
Because you've got polar bears, and you have feline-based alien races as well.
This doesn't sound anything like classic pulp sci-fi to me at all.
No, I'm still stuck on how do you crossbreed humans with crystal people?
They said
that hurt.
How does that work? Lots of lube. No, it's you got it because it's dry, man. I'm telling you. But I think they described it as being something along the lines of a strange energy. Let's see. So it was discovered the contact between these highly charged aliens in a human cell causes a cloning of sorts, and there you go. Crystal clones are called.
It's like every time you shake hands, you get child support.
Apparently so, yeah. So it's more of a wave, I guess, with these people if you don't want to clone. But yeah, then you can also be the feline type race, you can be the polar bear type race.
I hate the obligatory cat people.
Yes, obligatory cat people. You know, it's hex-based map sheet. You know
the cat people can ride the polar bear people.
They could ride the polar bear people.
They probably can, and all sorts of Rule 34 fanfic goodness.
Absolutely.
As happens every time there's
furries. Has telekinetic powers, ship combat. But it's definitely looking at it's very pulpy, and it's, of course, being called Star Ace, it's based around a lot of things that have to do with playing cards. So you've got your club's organization, your spades, your free spades, your diamonds,
the spades,
your hearts.
The cat people?
There's the Renegade Neuter organization as well, but
against Bob Barker.
Yeah.
Chris, this game sounds awful. It just sounds terrible.
It did.
It looks awful.
In your gamer closet grabs today, we had a potential win.
I would totally play it. I don't know if it's good enough, but I'd play it.
Could have been a win, but didn't work out historically. Too bad, so sad.
It's interesting, yeah.
And, man. And
poop on a plate.
Absolutely. It doesn't look. I mean, it's got more, you know, it's got gargantuan nods to Star Wars because you can get a laser sword.
When we say nods, you mean ripoffs?
Sure. You could call it that if you wanted to. Sure.
I guess this thing about it, there's sometimes creative properties cease to exist because history is a cruel mistress. Other times, this is creative natural selection.
Yes.
And I think in this last case, what we have is creative.
A market economy will destroy total crap like this.
Yeah. This is gaming Darwinism.
But it really, I mean, looking...
I need that on a t-shirt, John.
You can get it. My brother has a Milton Friedman t-shirt. It means the same thing.
Yeah, this game would be an example of how, you know, cover art, you know, can destroy marketability of a game because it just, and also the fact that it's in a box doesn't help it at all either. Because you would obviously be shrink wrapped. You'd never be able to get inside there.
So do you guys think that boxing a game is a bad idea? Because you don't really get boxed games anymore.
I have been told repeatedly by countless people inside the industry that game boxes do not sell anymore for a ton of different reasons, including the one Chris mentioned, which is you can't get in there and flip through them.
Right.
Personally, I'd still buy them. Because a box, unlike a book, can obviously have more stuff in there. So you could get
you're just a greedy bastard.
Like, well, I am. But you
little
know,
little books.
No, but like, I remember one
dice that disintegrate,
posters, maps,
rulers that you cannot read and break because you don't have any measurement devices in your house.
You know, and
your game is hex based.
And that's true. I mean, honestly, the cover art on the Run Up the Guns game. That's attractive cover art and where I would actually probably take the risk and go ahead and buy that box. Another example of a game that I would buy strictly on the title that did come in a box, and this was a solo game, Chainsaw Warrior by Games Workshop. Incredibly fun game. It's a solo game, but it's just great because it's just amusing as all get out, and it's called Chainsaw Warrior, so obviously you know you get to wield a chainsaw. So how bad can it be?
Wasn't there an advanced D&D that had... Okay, this is going to sound really stupid. They had a dragon on the cover, but it was... It was like this red dragon. It was all hunched down. Its mouth was open. And there was like this barbarian with a sword.
That's
kind of in front.
That's the famous red box. That's the
one. The red box. I mean, that's a really cool picture right there.
Yep, that's a cool picture.
Yeah,
that's how most. That's how a good chunk of gamers started was with that baby, mm-hmm. And that's how I started. Was I got red boxed, and you know, mm-hmm. Again, great cover art.
John got hot boxed into gaming.
Yep,
better than getting teabagged.
No, John did not get teabagged into gaming. John got the second edition Redbox equivalent. There was a little Orb of Dragonkind adventure in there, and then a haunted house, and then a straight dungeon crawl. And I was hooked. But I've told that story before. But now you know again.
All right, closing off the gamer's closet. Let's
slam that shut. Slam the door. It.
John, you brought up something.
Yep.
Do you want me to introduce it, or do you want to introduce it?
I'll introduce it. All right. I'm a big boy.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, I'm at the Scottish Arms the other night on a date. Whoa.
Not with Dan and I?
No, not with Dan and you.
I'm jealous.
A girl.
I bet she didn't have cigars.
She didn't have cigars.
Or beautiful
but
hair.
But we got talking to gaming. Her hair was pretty cute. But she raised an interesting objection to certain personality types and the troubles they have at the gaming table.
Is she a gamer?
That is,
you probably
she is
this.
A wants-to-be gamer, but has difficulty for this reason.
You gotta give her a little private lessons on
I'll
how
give
to
her
game.
A little private lessons. We're already learning wolfing. No, we're not. But the point that she brought up was, if you are so shy and timid that a large group of people kind of get you to retreat back into a shell, it's really hard to game. Because at a gaming table, there's 5 or 6 people. And more often than not, a couple of them are really loud and competing
for
attention. And if you're not the type that fights for the spotlight, it can be easy to just let 4 hours go by without saying a word at all, especially if, say, Chad's at your table and Dan's running the game.
What?
I was waiting for that.
What you say? I'm a wallflower game.
So
what
anyway,
are you talking about?
The question begged by this whole conversation was, how do you, the FTB 9000 GM, incorporate a player who is shy as all get out?
Do you know I have
to play?
I have to force myself not to say anything during games.
Yes.
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 You know, sometimes you fail at that.
Yes.
Okay.
Horribly.
Well, first of all, as an FTB 9000 compliant GM, I would tell you the question begging is a logical fallacy, so we should not engage in that in our discussion.
Okay. Allow me to use popular idiom in my everyday conversation rather than demanding philosophy major lines of crap.
Very good. We shall be so pedestrian.
Okay. And they say fear the Buddha's pretensions.
Nerds.
Goat poop.
So anyway.
Yeah.
The solution that sprung right to mind was one that you actually did to me, Chad, when I was new to the group. Not necessarily shy, but the new guy.
Yeah.
Which was put them in charge of the party.
Yes.
Force leadership decisions on them so that they can't back
did
away.
Did that all the time.
Because they're the lieutenant and everyone else is a sergeant or a private.
Then when command decision needs to be made, everybody shuts up and looks at you.
Yes.
And you have to do something.
You can't slough it off on your Sarge because you're Red Starship Troopers and you know that makes them nervous.
It depends on the group, though, because I have been in some
groups. No, it doesn't. I do it without discretion.
Well, that's because you're GMing. Now, let's say that
Chad,
I did
sometimes
this.
Those games have failed.
Yes,
also.
They have.
Okay. Let's say that I did this in a group where you were playing, not GMing. What would probably happen fairly quickly is we'd have so-and-so who's really quiet as lieutenant, Chad is the sergeant, or not even the sergeant, and we'd pretty
just
quickly...
Just hijacking the group?
Yeah, exactly. We'd pretty quickly have Chad hijacking the group, and the only reason there wouldn't be insubordination is because the other person's too quiet to level insubordination charges.
Well,
and the cosmos rolls on. That works for me.
You can have the NPC colonel who walks down to the PC lieutenant's office and says, get a hold of your platoon. Chad, you did that to me.
Yeah.
And I shot him.
Yeah. How'd that turn out?
My lieutenant wound up dead.
Yeah.
He went on a high school shooting spree because everyone in the base had picked on him for the wimp that he was until he finally just went out in a blaze of gunfire.
Yeah.
Man, I hope there's no big school shootings around the time the show drops. No. We'd hate to die the same way Muppets Tonight did.
What?
Muppets Tonight was the newer Muppet show that
yeah,
was
I remember
all,
that one.
Yeah, okay, well, what killed the show was they were going through its run and they had an episode where there was a bomb in the studio, and if the ratings went beneath a certain amount, the bomb was going to detonate.
That's funny.
Well, it was a pretty funny episode, but the night it was going to drop or the week it was going to drop was the Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh. Mm.
And so this episode was going to drop like the night of or the night after, something like that, the Oklahoma City bombing occurred. So they pulled it off
so
the air.
So forget about that. Yeah.
Yeah, they pulled it off the air and the show never, I don't know if that's weak. What killed it, but the show never rebounded. It just never came back and then disappeared into some back channel of cable and was on Disney for a while. And now I don't think it's on the air at all anymore.
I'd have to say that I completely disagree with Chad's approach. Here, learn to swim. Learn to swim. Throw you right in the water. All I can think of when you say that is the number of people that would just completely and utterly backfire on. I mean, if you they just would be so... If you know you're a noob and you're sitting at the table with people who you know are veterans, you're just going to be nervous about making too many mistakes and causing more problems than actual solutions.
Well, the thing about the sink or swim is it's an all or nothing gamble because the person just might sink. And that's why I don't say that I disagree with Chad, because I have used that exact method before. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of politics in general that goes into picking a leader, and just the way it is. But I have before taken a person who was very quiet and put them in a leadership position. But I always think that out very carefully, or at least I do lately, because there's been too many times where I don't think that out carefully enough, and we throw the person in the pool and they sink straight to the bottom.
It could also not work in a different way too. Not even like it blows up in your face, but we have a friend, Kevin, who is very shy and very quiet, but he's not nervous about it. He just does not talk.
Yeah.
So if you made him the leader or the front man, nothing would get done. It isn't even a matter of, he wouldn't be like, oh no, I can't take it, because he's not like that. He's a strong person, but he would just sit there and it's like, okay, Kevin, the clock is ticking. You know, everybody's gonna die. You're in charge. What do you do?
Well,
I don't know. I'll have to think about that. No. Yeah, and then it won't work.
Well, you know, and I guess I would have to do a revision of my opinion and say that. In the case of a new player, I think I would disagree with Chad. In the case of someone who is experienced with that, then I could actually I could see where that might work, where you might be able to bring them out. But I think if it was me, I would approach it more from the angle of that would force me to really put on the GM skills to where I would, when I was dealing with that specific player and character, I would have to do more GM acting, more voice work, more participatory, more exposition, more description, anything to really try and engage that person and try and bring some more things out of them, you know?
Yeah, and tangential to that point, if one of their worries is that this whole thing is stupid, if you're more stupid than they are, then
I was
no worried
say,
about it.
That's what Chris just described is exactly what I have found does work typically, is you as the GM have to notch it up.
See, I don't have to worry about that because I'm on my A game every time.
But what I'll do is I'll get the person in a situation. You don't want to do this for too long because it'll bore the other players, but get them where for a moment they're isolated. You know, they just woke up in the quarters of their ship or whatever. And I will have some NPC talk to them or whatever. And I will really lay it on thick, be very...
Blag-a-lag, the hippopotamus mercenary wraps his arm around her shoulder as she wakes up. What does she do? No recollection.
Wow.
Yeah. Getting back to that fanfic.
That was a Spelljammer reference, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
You're sick, man.
How many other settings have hippopotamus mercenaries?
For good reason.
All right.
But anyway.
So isolate and make a decision.
Right. That's one of the things that I found works is if you ham it up as a GM, it's like, I think it was Chris just said, that they have trouble feeling stupid when you're looking even more stupid.
Yeah, when you're doing your kobold voice, there's nothing they can do except for roll up a hippo mercenary to make them look more dumb than you.
Well, okay, let's turn it
and
around.
And I do the kobold voice.
Let's turn it around then. You have a group, 4 or 5 people, who are all boisterous and all outgoing and great players, right?
Right.
And you have somebody who's in your group, friend, whatever. Any situation you want to imagine to get this to work. You have a person who wants to GM, but they are shy.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
What, as players, you know, this
you
isn't
have
like...
You self-control. It has to be self-control. And see, this comes down to the players have to be cognizant of the situation. And this is one of the, I think, the great flaws of humanity in general, is we do not stop often enough and really think about how we're affecting the people around us. And I'm not trying to get some huge tangent with that, because
just a small tangent.
Right. And I'm overstating a point here, so please don't anyone start taking some
Dan at feartheboot.com.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
But the point being, though, that, you know, I think it's one of the flaws of people in general is that we don't stop enough to think about how we're affecting others. And I've seen a lot of games like that where you just as a player have to stop and say, wait a minute, so-and-so's GMing, so-and-so's really soft-spoken. If we all go hog wild here, they're not going to be able, nothing's going to happen in the game. It's going to be a boring game because this person's never going to get a story out.
But
and so you just have to calm yourself down. And
but if you're too calm, and I'm not arguing your point. No, I totally agree with what you're saying. But on the other hand, if you pull it too back,
and they don't have enough initiative to begin with, then the game is double going nowhere.
Yeah,
then they're trying to get into you, and you're not going.
Exactly.
Yeah, the players always need to be a little feisty, no matter what. Because a game that follows solely on GM exposition is better conducted as a novel.
Our current group has a saying about not when I started or when Dan started, but like before us with their old group of configuration of gamers. They said that they had a group where the players didn't really want to do anything, and they weren't lazy players. I mean, they're willing to, you know, fight and but as far as like following the plot, asking the questions, interacting with NPCs,
just wanted it to be served to them.
Exactly. In fact, they would have like a saying for it, something like, and I'm misquoting terribly, but something like, "Yeah, pull up the plot wagon," and that's. They actually told the GM that. It's like, just pull up the plot on a wagon and serve it out so we can move on.
So they wanted a JRPG game where they could sit back, watch cutscenes, and occasionally fight.
Yeah, pretty much. I wasn't there. That's my understanding.
Boring type of pen and paper role-playing ever.
I agree with you personally, but if that's what you enjoy and the whole group's on board with this, then more power to you.
They're wrong. That's an awful way to play.
Why not play
it's an interactive game. It's an interactive game where people sit around and have fun and interact with each other. Not saying they're not having fun, but that's just a terrible game.
I'm with Chad. If you just want to sit down and do math, then sit down and, you know, grab a textbook and just do some problems. But yeah, it's interactive, and it's not just the dice rolling. There's got to be that give and take.
Yep. If you're playing role playing games that way, Chad at Fear the Boot says you're doing it wrong,
which is easy to say. I don't think there currently is a Chad at Fear the Boot.
No, there isn't.
Well, send it to me. I'll say it's wrong. I'll say it's wrong, and you can send me an email because I don't think I've got any email yet.
You can send it to me.
Yeah, you actually. Yeah, everybody needs to start sending hate and love mail to Chris.
That's right.
Yeah. Does Chris have an email address?
He'll fart on you if you don't send him an email. He'll fart on you if you do.
I'll go 5728 all over your ass.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, there's going to have to be some resorting of email addresses anyway, because when we move to the new server, we've got a bunch of potential new hosts and contributors coming on board for the two new shows. So there's going to be a big email address reconfiguration here in the next week or two anyway. So, but for the moment, you can send stuff to Chris at FearTheBoot.com. And I'm sure Chris at FearTheBoot.com will still exist on the other side of this change.
And as he said, he hasn't gotten any fan mail.
Yeah. So send all of your furry porn to Chris at FearTheBoot.com.
If you're a lonely woman who loves Battletech and can write in character, I know a guy who can.
Or if you're a lonely male who loves Battletech and can write in character.
It's the internet. You can be a lonely woman.
Hey, not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, getting back to the original point or the original topic, because we never really go off tangents very often here. But, you know, I think, too, a good tactic to approach is, if you know this player is generally timid, talk to them before the session and say to them, you know, in this upcoming session, I want to try and do these things with your character. There's some important things that I want to have happen to your character. And feed this stuff saying, you know, and tell them, say, look, you know, I really need you to kind of, you know, step it up a little bit. No, you know, this is going to happen. I want some interaction with you in regard to this, and give them that little pep talk, you know, beforehand to, you know, make them come out.
Yeah. And another thing you can do, not necessarily make them the leader, but use a nice FTB group template, give them a clear job, make them the Scotty or whatever, and then have the engine blow up. So
I think
their skills have to be applied to save the day. Or
I think I'd go more John's route than Chris's route, because Chris, the one thing that would concern me about your approach there is you just create production anxiety.
Yeah, it's possible. I can see what you're saying. You can do that, and because then suddenly you put this pressure, and then oh man, if I don't perform, they're going to kick me out of the group. And that's, you know,
I hate that pressure.
And you know, if you didn't want to do that, you could also go from the angle of NPCs are a great way to bring them out. If the party is interacting with an NPC, you know, that NPC could easily be irritated by one of the two or the more boisterous characters on the table, just for whatever reason that they wanted. And then
have
they
an NPC arbitrarily dislike everyone but the quiet player. Chad, you do that without even doing it.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That's a common practice. You just, you know, hey, this guy irritates me, you know, and then
I don't like your beard.
Yeah. Have the NPC key in on that timid character, the timid player, and, you know, seek their opinion or seek their counsel have them pit each other against, you know, the characters against each other.
There's no better NPC than a bully. There really isn't.
That's true. A misdirected amorous suitor.
Yeah.
You would drop game dudes on Dawn all the time who was quiet. And
yeah.
Arrogant nobles. Arrogant nobles are a good choice.
Yeah.
I think curmudgeons make the best NPCs.
I like curmudgeons.
Like John said, I would always have, like, the buff, handsome, heroic dudes, you know, hit on Dawn, and she would completely and totally blow them off. And not just, you know, blow them off, but blow them out of the water.
I was actually the dude once after my lieutenant got killed in that same game. I was that clanner for a while, that actual Vat-born.
Did she
perfect clanner?
I think her character actually beat you off with a stick one time.
That might have happened. Well, I had been in Innersphere culture for about 5 minutes, so I had no concept of.
Yeah, and it was a free love
courtship
society.
I was just like, okay, let's go, and Dawn was like, no, and I was like, what?
What? That's
and
no one's ever
I
said
wound
no
up
before.
With milk thrown in my face and beat over the head with a club and all that sort of stuff. And it was great.
Yeah, it was a great role play.
But that's my gaming story.
Yes, that's the gaming story of how your character hit on my character, on my wife's
on your wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time on Jerry Springer.
I've always preferred the NPCs who speak ambiguously and then purposely lie to the characters to try and mislead them and frustrate them down the road.
I never
did
that.
The obligatory spy packed into every
$8
module worth its worth.
Well, I'm not even talking about spy. I'm just talking about the general asshole in the end who either A, is grossly misinformed about something or just likes to, you know, talk out their ass.
A lot of my NPCs are like that. A lot of my PCs are like that. I am like that.
Well, you know, what about you, if you want to expand on the topic, we can talk. What if you got a group full of timid players? How do you get them? How do you really bring them out?
Like GMs and players are everyone's timid?
And this is, I experienced this a little bit with a group I play with a couple times here, and they were all kind of just coming back into gaming. They'd taken maybe a year or two hiatus. And one of the issues that I've kind of faced is I sat down for a couple of sessions with a group here locally where they've come back. They were just coming back into gaming after a 1 or 2 year hiatus. And I'm very much the role player, very much get into the whole thing. But they necessarily weren't. And it was kind of maybe a combination of them getting back into the rules and just kind of getting back into the whole thing. But there wasn't really a lot of, you know, the whole group really was timid in that regard. And it's very difficult to try and pull things out of them as far as personalities and inter-party actions when they're just not giving you anything. I mean, you know, you talked about the interactivity earlier. If you're not getting energy from your players, it's very difficult to continue on throwing that energy out back at them.
If you have a completely flat-line group of players to the person, I don't even know what you can do.
You know, as a GM,
that's, you can do anything.
That's happened to me before. Not that I've had a whole group of shy, non-energy players, but like it even happens. Everybody's just having a bad day. It's a rainy day outside. Everyone's kind of down.
Sometimes you just got to call a game.
That's easier as you can blow off a single session versus if you've got a group full of timid people.
Oh,
it's not going to be better.
I can imagine what that's like because, I mean, I've done that before where I'm sitting there and I'm like throwing it out and it's just like, yeah, and what do you guys do? And they're just like,
what do we can do?
And
what's next?
Yeah, I will,
that,
as a GM,
that happens with a group full of newbies.
Time to go bowling.
Which I have a habit of running for whatever reason. But suffer through 20 or 30 minutes of it, and usually one or two of them figures out they can do anything.
You know, and actually, I'll throw out the advice of, you know, how earlier we said, with the one guy, you want to lay it on thicker and bring more of your A game and pump it up more. When you have the whole group, maybe you want to back it off a little because you can. I've seen it before. It's game master mesmerizing, where you get so into it and you're so going, and the descriptions are so thick. Everybody's just like, yeah, 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 and then you stop, and they're looking at you, and you're like, okay, guys,
you know,
and they're like, yeah.
If I had a table full of people that are timid, I think I'd go back to isolating one person. And the reason I say that, there's advice they give to people that have to deal with emergency situations, which is you never look at a crowd and say, somebody dial 911.
Yeah, you point to the guy.
Yeah, because if you say somebody dial 911 to 20 people, everyone just assumes that somebody else is doing it. Everyone just kind of falls back into the crowd. But if you point at one guy and say, you, sir, right there, dial 911, now suddenly the person's been made responsible for it. And it's kind of the same thing that if you have four or five players and they're all quiet, and I as a GM lay it on thick and then pause, they're all just going to kind of wait for somebody else to go first. Yeah. Whereas if I say, okay, you know, Ted, you know, you...
Not Ted.
The colonel calls you down and says this and does this.
There's always a colonel in your game. Do you ever notice that? Always.
Colonels are really convenient.
Even if
though.
It's like the caveman like, role-playing game, deal, you have caveman colonel.
Colonel caveman.
And ironically, when Dan plays Korn, the RPG, there are no colonels.
Wow.
Korn, the RPG.
So,
what is that? Enjoy popularity in the mid-90s and then make crap out of covering Pink Floyd.
Aw, shucks.
I want to play a freak on a leash.
Whatever. I bought issues. I'm not going to lie.
So, anyway. And also, I can throw out a piece of cheap game mastering trickery that you can use. Pull one of your shy... Like, this, you're going into it knowing you have a shy group.
Right.
Pull one of them aside. Tell them a little bit of what's going on in the plot and tell them, okay, when this happens, I want you to do this. You know, it's like the king comes out right. And the king is really secretly the bad guy. No one knows it. It's revealed to him that he's the bad guy. When the king comes out, makes his speech, does his thing, the guy pulls out a gun and blows his head off.
There's nothing that will fire up a group more than pulling someone aside and not telling anyone else what that was about.
Yep.
Everyone else hates it, and the guy you told it to loves it.
Do you know how many times I pulled people aside in our old group, and I was just like,
"Yeah, you hey, did what's it to up? Me half the time, because you knew I wasn't going to be the guy that turned around and said, oh, nothing happened.
Yeah, I was like, hey, what's up? How's it good? You working next week? Yeah. Okay, cool, let's go back.
Related to that, if you really want to, if you feel you can handle it, I would almost suggest doing that with the entire group. If you feed them all a different piece of information regarding a plot point that you're going to reveal in the adventure... And so that when you reveal that plot point, they've all got different angles to take on that. Suddenly, they're all going to start talking because someone's going to say, you know, oh, I heard that we need to go down here and talk to this guy at the docks. And then we'll say, wait a second. No, I heard you have to go up here to the merchant's quarter and talk about this. You can suddenly now spur, because as soon as you get the second person saying something, everyone's going to jump in on there. And they're all going to realize they've got different things here. And that is going to create some interaction there while they begin to argue about what they want to do. And some emotions are going to come out.
And that's great for you as a GM when players interact with each other, because that means that you can sit back and don't have to do anything.
Exactly.
Well, honestly, that's kind of the reverse extreme, but it works as well, is if you leave an open hook to everyone, I don't expect anything to happen because they fall back into the crowd.
Right.
But if you just stop completely and you don't like, you know, oh, the colonel caveman comes in and says this and you wait for their response.
He's been promoted.
But if you just say like, okay, you guys are... out in the street in front of the bank and you got to do the bank job and then you just sit down and you let human sociology take its course and somebody's going to step forward and be like, well, maybe we should do this, and then somebody else is going to disagree with them and
you know
it starts to fall out from there.
Another thing you can do, and this is a totally different thing you can do, is that you can take two or three people from your gaming group and pull those three people aside and say, you guys are going to play NPCs for the next 20 minutes. You're going to play this guy. You're going to play Gangster 1, Gangster 2, Gangster 3. And it's Ted, Joe, and John. And this is what you guys are going to do. This is what you guys, you know, what you're going to say. And when the boss gives you the wink, that's when you put the screws to the players. You know, not get into a combat fight, but, you know, just kind of like menace them and stuff. And it, when you give them a role, it, you know, they... The shy people kind of follow into that role. They that predefined actions that they can do. And this is not something that you, that is their role playing and you do it every single game, but it kind of like gets them into the mood, so to speak.
It and it can break up the necessary one-player spotlight sessions,
right,
which
right.
do happen, even when we try to not make them happen.
Yeah, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. I mean, I always am, because when the person gets into that little NPC you gave them, they start doing things that you haven't planned on. And whatever you do, do not look at the person and say, oh, no, that guy doesn't do that, unless you're doing something stupid like saying I sprout wings and fly off and you're playing a 1930s gangster thing with no magic in it. But, you know, it's like you roll with that. You know, they've kind of taken that over and they're getting into it. And that's a good thing. So you keep going with it.
Yeah. Don't break that wall. Let them go. And, yeah. And just roll with it.
And if it turns out that they end up liking that character more than their own character, let them have it. Let them keep playing. They found a character they got into. And that has happened to me several times.
Yes and no. Yes, if the character fits with the other group in any way at all and is balanced. Yeah. Like, you've had me play an elemental for 5 minutes in full armor, you know, with rockets flying off my back and flamethrowers for arms.
Sure.
You're not going to put that into the party.
No. It's
discretion. You know that already.
Yeah. Your group of level 3 D&D heroes are surrounded by the, you know, elder gods, and you have the guys playing minor gods as NPCs. They're like, I really like this level 38,000 god with the tentacles who's invincible and can kill people on sight. I want to play him. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet Moander.
With his sweet, gooey goodness.
Okay.
Alrighty, well, I think that I'm going to spend the next week trying to draw Chad out of his shell and get him to stop being so bashful.
Yeah, really, Chad, you got to participate more in the podcast, man.
I will talk to Dawn about Gen Con. We'll see.
Yay. Alright, so thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Later days. We'll see.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.